We are talking with Father Mark Begley, the pastor of Our Mother of Sorrows Catholic Church and St. Michael's Catholic Church in Johnstown, Pennsylvania. This is week 6, the final week of the message series for Easter, Enlightenment, the Gospel of John. Welcome, Father Mark.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here with you.
Well, Father Mark, session 6, as I said, is the final week of the message series for Easter, Enlightenment. Father Mark, what do you mean by enlightenment?
Well, that's actually a very good question, because the other three stages, seem to be a little self-explanatory. This one is not. And enlightenment does represent the fourth stage in this movement of the believer from conversion to baptism and Eucharist to an ever deeper relationship with God in Jesus. And I think one of the reasons why this last stage is called enlightenment is because here in chapter 8, Jesus says, "I am the light of the world." It's as if this mysterious spiritual side of life suddenly is illumined in a way that provides a clear vision that each of us begin to grasp the meaning of our lives. We still have our struggles. We still have our challenges, which would be a very interesting thing to continue to talk about a little bit as things unfold. But we now see the meaning of our challenges and our struggles in a whole new way. We are enlightened in our relationship with Jesus Christ.
And just to paraphrase what you just said in this introduction to enlightenment, what struck to me was the idea of clear vision of the meaning of life.
Right, and we're going to see that all the way through. The vision becomes clear. That's why I think it's called enlightenment, this idea of there's a certain clarity about where we're going and how to get there.
Well, Father Mark, before we go through the notes, which you always provide, and we do appreciate that very much, I know there's a text that you use, and we like to reference that for those that are listening.
Sure. And some of the parishioners have actually bought this text and find it very readable for them. So I would urge you to take a look at it if you're interested in really getting more deeply into the Gospel of John. It's by Father Demetrius Dumm, D-U-M-M, entitled A Mystical Portrait of Jesus, A New Perspective on John's Gospel, and I would highly recommend the text.
Well, Father Mark, I cue you. You run with it, and that's worked so well for us, so we'll just continue with that plan.
Sure, that sounds great.
I am the light of the world.
And while that is chapter 8, verse 12, it's actually the beginning of this section. I want to go back for just a moment and say that the story of the adulterous woman, which appears in the Gospel of John, really seems to be something that was added on later on and really not a part of this four-stage sequence. So really, this is the beginning of chapter 8, this verse 12, where Jesus says right at the beginning, "I am the light of the world." So as always, we're talking about going beyond externals, beyond the superficial, beyond mere observance of rituals and recitation of prayers to a truly, deeply personal relationship with Jesus Christ. Such enlightenment occurs when one has been converted, baptized, experiences the Eucharist, and now they reach this kind of maturity and depth where they begin to see this clarity of things, this clarity of purpose and clarity of life. They enter into relationship with Jesus Christ, the light of the world.
Now, Father Mark, you mentioned something in your notes about the externals of our religion. What do you mean by that?
Well, we all do have our externals. We're Catholics. We have Holy Mass that we go to celebrate Sunday after Sunday. We say our prayers. We read the scriptures during all that. And those externals are meant to take us to enlightenment. They're supposed to be a path that get us there. So that's a really good question, by the way. And so these externals, I'm not trying to dismiss them. Neither is John in his gospel. He's simply saying we should put them in the right perspective as a path that takes us to the relationship.
If you continue in my word, you are truly my disciple.
Now this And as we're at the end for our purposes here in the Gospel of John, and we've used this word continue in many different ways. We heard it as stay, if you stay. We've heard it as remain, if you remain. We've heard it as abide. And now this time, that exact same word is being translated continue. This is John's favorite word, to continue, to abide, to remain, to stay, to be in relationship. If you continue in my word, you're my disciple. If you stay in my word. And so there's that same Greek word being translated different ways over and over again. And this describes this mystical union that God has with all believers.
And when you use the word continue, if you continue in my word, it's something that you need to do daily. It's not absolutely something you have daily to work at it.
This is a day. Absolutely. This is a daily thing. I think a really good sign that someone is really in the word or really continuing in the relationship with Jesus Christ is they have a daily practice. I think that is an infallible sign that someone has been captured by Jesus Christ in relationship with him.
You will know the truth, and the truth will set you free.
Now, we're talking about being set free internally. Here in this part of chapter 8, the leaders, the scribes and Pharisees are arguing with Jesus. And Jesus is saying to them that you will know this truth. And in this truth that I am sharing with you, that he's the light of the world, we will find this inner freedom. Sadly, they retreat to more familiar territory, and they claim to be descendants of Abraham. So they don't really listen. And so they're still kind of trapped. They're still kind of imprisoned. They can't break free and allow Jesus to show them something new. And we see that all the way through the Gospel of John, where it's the leaders especially of the church at that time who find themselves locked in this prison of provincial prejudice. And their provincial prejudice, in other words, I mean, we've always done it this way. Now you're telling us to do it this way. And they can't bring themselves to something new. So they continue to be locked in this prison. So they don't allow Jesus and his truth to set them free.
He saw a man blind from birth.
We shift here from chapter 8, which is the chapter of enlightenment, to chapter 9. And we have a big story here of this man who was born blind. And obviously, this is a story about enlightenment. In fact, the cure of this man's physical blindness is only the beginning of his recovery. He must overcome his spiritual blindness too. And by contrast, as the story unfolds, the Pharisees who begin with physical sight end up being spiritually blind. So he becomes more and more enlightened. They enter more and more into darkness. And that's the interesting part about the story as it unfolds for us.
I am the man.
And that's, he simply says in one other translation, I am. And so they ask him, are you the guy who was blind? And he says, yeah, I'm that guy. And then he starts to describe his experience with Jesus. So one of the very first parts of our being enlightened is that we begin to allow other people to witness to us. We begin to listen to other folks. And they, as they talk to us and share their story, we begin to be really interested, like, what touched this man? What made him so different? And he begins to tell that story.
He is a prophet.
And now here's another stage of the development of this man who was born blind. After he ponders who this Jesus is, he's now prepared to declare his own personal conviction that Jesus is a man of God, not God yet, not Messiah, not Lord, but prophet. Somehow this Jesus is different. There's something unique about him, and that shows a little bit more of his open heart.
You are his disciple, but we are disciples of Moses.
So here, this next stage in the development, scribes and Pharisees start interviewing this man, and he starts telling them all about Jesus. And while everybody else was listening, they don't. They regress once again. As we just said before, they regress, and they go backwards. They're afraid of this Jesus and everything he is saying to them. this great challenge to escape from their past and live in the future. And so as we just saw in chapter 8, they retreat to familiar territory, claiming not to be descendants of Abraham this time, but to be disciples of Moses. Safety versus risk in a relationship with Jesus Christ. That, I think, stops most people from going forward. They want safety in their spiritual lives. They want almost like a vaccination against the real thing. And the real thing is a relationship with Jesus, who takes them on an adventure that they can't even begin to imagine.
Father Mark, not to simplify what we were talking about, but you always hear that people don't like change. So there is some of that,
yes,
in the significance of what you're talking about.
I think that's a big part of it. We have, what's the other, that's correct, people don't like change. I've heard it said, people will accept a known hell before they'll risk an unknown heaven. And oftentimes in our misery, we just simply are so afraid to change. And Jesus is always calling us to get out of our comfort zone and change.
Well, I will tell you on a personal basis, Father, that once you make a decision to follow Jesus, it's simple. It's uncomplicated. And it really is.
And isn't it a great adventure?
I agree, totally. Life is so much better.
Yeah, and it's totally unexpected what he has us do, too.
Trust me, I completely understand that, too. Lord, I believe.
Okay, here we are in verse 38, and now the man becomes a believer. He now sees Jesus not with his physical eyes only, but he sees him with his whole new spirit. He's enlightened, and now the miracle is complete, and all of us Christians have to go on the same journey. I mentioned in the beginning Father Demetrius's book, and let me quote something that he says there in the book about this particular section here. He writes, "They mean that this blind man can now see Jesus with more than his physical eyes. He can now see in a new, whole, spiritual way. He is now truly enlightened. It is only now, therefore, that the miracle is complete. And with this new vision, the former blind man can now cry out, 'Lord, I believe,'" which is how we introduce this section. Then he goes on to say this, "It is clear that John wants all Christians to make that same journey from childhood, when Jesus is accepted through the witness of believing parents, to early adulthood, when Jesus is accepted with personal faith, but still mainly through titles, to Christian maturity, when Jesus has become an inseparable friend in the center of one's life." This is another expression of this enlightenment that we're talking about here.
"He calls his own sheep by name and leads them out."
Okay, so we leave chapter 9 behind. We go on to chapter 10 here, and where Jesus is the true shepherd. And in the early church, this was the first title, I think. When you look at the catacombs, and they were drawing pieces of art of what Jesus was like, oftentimes the shepherd was one of those early images and titles they gave to Jesus. And he calls the sheep by name. From what I gather, and I think I've heard this once before, shepherds have a very distinctive call or whistle to call their sheep. And all human, this is an interesting comment. This is a quote by Father Demetrius. "All human hearts are made to respond to God's call. All of us deep inside, when we hear God's call, we know it somehow. But then the question becomes, are we going to follow or are we going to play it safe?"
Well, I would tell anybody, don't play it safe.
Yeah, right. Yes.
"Now a certain man was ill, Lazarus of Bethany."
And we made just one quick reference to chapter 10 there. Now we move quickly to chapter 11, the final chapter in our section here. And here we're introduced to this person called Lazarus, a story of every one of us. "Since all of us are ill with this incurable disease called sin and mortality, Lazarus represents all of us as we come to Jesus seeking healing in our lives." And that's the reason why we first show up. We go to Jesus, first of all, because we're in need Something's missing. And so Lazarus resents all of us in that needing to be healed.
Martha went and met him.
And in the story, Martha, we could talk about all the characters of the story, Martha and Mary, Lazarus. But she's the one who has a zillion questions, and she represents us in that way, always asking the question, why? And it's interesting in the story how Jesus answers her questions, not with explanations, but with actions. He does things. He shows himself to be the answer, doesn't offer explanations a lot, but offers answers in a very unique way. And so Martha's an interesting character in all this.
Lazarus, come out.
What a beautiful statement at the end of chapter 11, the end of this section on enlightenment. Jesus is saying to Lazarus, let me go back to Lazarus, come out. It's a reference almost back to the Hebrew people whenever they were leaving Egypt. God calling them out of slavery into freedom. It's a sense in which Lazarus is being called from death into new life, into enlightenment. So it's almost an echo of the dramatic words of Moses. And then there's another beautiful section after he says that. He says, untie him and let him go, which means let him be absolved of his sin, of his brokenness, and set free the way God set free the Israelites of a long time ago from Egypt. He sets Lazarus free in the same way. So let my people go. Let Lazarus go.
A lot of symbolism for us followers.
Right. Yes. As the and just to ponder that idea of being set free from our own slavery, and all of us, I guess, should ponder a little bit, what enslaves me? And this last quote, we go all the way back to the very beginning.
No one has ever seen God, the only Son, who is the same as God and is at the Father's side. He has made him known.
This is chapter 1, verse 18. So we go all the way back to the beginning, not because it is part of the enlightenment section of the gospel, because it's not, but this is kind of like a prelude to his gospel. It's interesting. Oftentimes authors, they'll write a book, then they'll go back and write like a prelude to it, or go back and write the title to it. That's what this is like here. It's almost like this is the last finishing touches for the Gospel of John. And here it is, chapter 1, verse 1 to verse 18. And what John is trying to say here is that the story of Jesus begins long before Bethlehem in the realm of eternity. It's there that the divine word experiences the love of God. And it is from there that this word, Jesus, came into our world to tell us about how much God desperately loves us. So this first 18 chapters, which is like a big poem, is a way of introducing the Gospel of John. And then we begin the Gospel with chapter 1, verse 19. But here we have it as our conclusion.
Well, you start at the beginning, you go to the end, and you go back to the beginning, right?
Right. We've come full circle.
Yes, we have. Yes. Father Mark, I want to thank you for sharing your knowledge and thoughts as they relate to the Gospel of John. It has truly been my pleasure kind of walk through this journey with you, and I'm sure we'll be doing it again sometime.
I enjoyed it too, and I hope people enjoyed listening, and I hope it gives them the courage to pick up the Gospel of John and the whole Bible themselves and enter into this great adventure of this relationship with Jesus Christ.